This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Here's another Saturday Magazine podcast brought to you by Joy sponsor, Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, you're listening to Saturday Magazine, every Saturday 10 till 12.
We have Ed Santow, who's a Human Rights Commissioner from the Australian Human Rights Commission. Good morning to you, Ed.
Good morning.
Great to have you back on the waves again.
Yes, thank you.
Glad to be with you.
So before we launch into a discussion of the Religious Freedoms Report, there was an event yesterday in Sydney, I believe, that you participated in, and the Australian Marriage Equality won an award. Could you briefly tell us about that, please?
Yeah, it's our major event for the year. It's known as the Human Rights Awards. They've been going for decades now. And it's an incredibly emotional day. There are lots of people there who very quietly do important work to protect people's human rights and never get recognised for, 40, 50 years, and suddenly this is their first time when they are recognised. And then there are others who are more prominent in the community. But really importantly, Marika, the AME won an important award for the work that it has been doing over several years now to promote the right to marriage equality. And we were delighted to see that award being given.
Yeah, that's fabulous. Congratulations to AME, and congratulations also for your role in that as well. So, religious freedoms, that's sort of the topic on everyone's tongue at the moment. The report was released during the course of the week, and we've seen the government's response. What's your take on what's occurred, and what do you think is the politics behind all of this?
Well, I mean, we're certainly very pleased to see the report released. There's been a lot of speculation about it, and it's good to be able to talk in much more concrete terms, so that's a really good thing. And broadly speaking, you can divide the report into different categories. I'm not qualified to talk about the politics of it, but talking about the report from a human rights perspective and the government's response is really interesting. So there are some things that we've been supportive of, as have civil society organisations, for 20-odd years now. So we've been saying that people of faith should be protected from discrimination and do so at a general level. And that's a really important recommendation in the report. So
Ed, what's broke there? What needs to be fixed? Because as I understand it, our constitution protects people of faith.
It's a very narrow protection in the constitution. So section 116 of the constitution basically says that you can't have a religious test for going into a public service job. And that's important. But there literally has never been a successful case under section 116, and that's partly for good reason, because it's, I guess you're alluding to, on the whole, people are very respectful of other people's faiths or no faith at all. So that's important, but it is a missing piece in our architecture that we say there's a prohibition against discriminating against someone on the basis of their race or their age or their sexual orientation or their gender, but we don't have a general prohibition on the basis of religion. And even if it's a rare occurrence that people are discriminated against, it's important that we have a really clear law that does that. I guess the detail is really important as well. And so, human rights can never be a zero-sum game. So we're very much looking forward to seeing the draft legislation. And it must be framed in a way that it's not basically saying that we're going to help this group, but we're going to harm this other group. And in particular, I guess we're all very concerned to make sure that it doesn't have any negative effect at all on the LGBTI community.
You've obviously, read the Ruddock Review, Ed. I haven't read it all, but the reports that I've read and people that have spoken to me about it say that it doesn't actually, if I can paraphrase, basically there's nothing to see here. that the examples that would require legislation to protect religious freedom, Philip, the Ruddock Review didn't really find them. Or am I wrong there?
Yeah, I mean, I think they made quite a nuanced point, which was that there doesn't seem to be any evidence that there's widespread discrimination against people on the basis of their faith. But they also observed that we don't have good data, and further that the law is meant to do a number of things, one of which is to just send a really clear message, an educative principle about what are the really important things that we take seriously as a country. So in one sense, you're right, and I'm very fortunate and proud to live in a country where on the whole people are treated fairly, no matter what their background is. I think it's also a really important principle. That people should not be discriminated against on the basis of their faith. And I pay tribute to the fact that a very large number of civil society organisations that were pro-marriage equality have also made that point loudly and clearly. And I think that's very fair-minded and appropriate.
I mean, to my mind, a religious belief can easily coexist with your sexual orientation. The difference is that, from my perspective, religious belief is something you choose. It's not genetic, despite what some people may say. Whereas your sexuality isn't something you choose, it is genetic. So I'm always troubled that, some of the arguments that are made, that religious belief trumps sexual orientation. Surely we can find a way where both can coexist and both can be respected.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. It's about coexistence. And certainly in human rights law, there's no support at all for the idea that, religious belief or the expression of religious belief trumps your sexual orientation or your race or anything else. It is exactly, as you say, about coexistence. But we also say, that human rights law is really clear on your political belief, which in a sense is a choice as well. And we would say just as strongly that you shouldn't be discriminated against on the basis of your political belief, whatever that political belief happens to be, your religious belief or whatever it is. And really, as you say, in a liberal democracy, what it's about is finding a way to coexist. Because most of the time, that coexistence is relatively straightforward. But from time to time, on really difficult issues, we have to be quite sensible and careful to make sure that those rights are accommodated.
And I mean, it's the last, the last thing that we want is, for people of faith to feel that they are being marginalised and discriminated against. But I would also say to those people of faith that they need to acknowledge and to understand that at the end of the day, LGBTI folk are God's work. No matter who your God is, they're God's work. And that I think there needs to be a greater accommodation there, but also LGBTI folk and others, we need to also be accommodating to people's faiths. But on that particular issue, I believe that what genetically you are is more important and more valid than a faith. And I know a lot of people will say that I'm anti-faith. I'm not. I just, faith is something you acquire, but they do have to coexist. But at the end of the day, I know which side of the argument I will come down on. And it won't be that your faith gazumps my rights to equality.
Yeah. And look, I think that's it. I mean, I think that's on the tricky issues, and perhaps that's a good jumping off point to look at one of the trickier issues that the report addressed, which was about particularly children in schools, but also teachers and other employees of schools. I think that's an area where we see enormous urgency in addressing a big problem in the law. And again, the problem might be largely symbolic. I don't think there's any evidence that religious schools are systematically discriminating against children on the basis of their, you know, sexual orientation or their gender identity. It is a problem, nevertheless, that you're sending the message that religious schools can discriminate in that way.
I think we call it institutionalized discrimination. It just shouldn't be allowed. It's as simple as that.
I worry about if you're a kid who is lesbian, gay, transgender, or whatever, that if you're told that the law allows your school to discriminate against you, what message does that send you about your self-worth? We should be saying, you know, that we love you in whatever form you come in, whatever shape, form, colour, whatever. And our law should be absolutely crystal clear about that. So we see it as being incredibly urgent that we, as a country, move to amend the capacity or to remove the capacity of religious schools to discriminate against children on the basis of their sexual orientation or gender identity. And that's an area where we think that the Ruddock report has identified the problem really well. But I think the solution is actually a really simple one. Those exemptions have to go.
I mean, it's a sensitive subject, but I come back to the question of genetics. Your sexuality, your gender is genetic. Now, if anyone was proposing that we should be having a discussion about whether Asian kids should be allowed to go to a school, or black kids, or Indian kids, or Turkish kids, would anyone seriously want to have that discussion? No, they wouldn't. Yet because, you know, some people's perspective from a religious point of view is that your sexuality and your gender is not genetic, that it's something you choose or that you're an aberration, it, you know, they want to give the argument some semblance of validity when the reality is it doesn't have any. They wouldn't be standing up saying, oh, let's exclude people of a particular race from kids from schools. Let's be able to discriminate against them. You know, they'd be howled down.
And rightly so. No, I completely agree. I think that is a part of our legislation that I don't think anybody is actively supporting. There seems to be, you know, widespread political agreement that we need to change that law. So we just got to get on and do it. And it does disturb me a little bit that we haven't yet done so.
We got a message from a listener and it said, I'm not sure I share your optimism about coexistence. You know, my optimism, religions by definition are discriminatory and consider others not of their faith a lesser person. Freedom of religion seems to actually mean freedom to discriminate. You can believe anything you like, of course, but you have the right... You have no right to inflict your beliefs on others, and I agree. But you know, optimism on an issue like this is what's important, rather than pessimism, because pessimism, I think, is not the way to go. We need to remain optimistic about that coexistence, but I'm not underestimating how difficult it's going to be.
Yeah, look, and I'm a human rights lawyer, so that seems to be the definition of an optimist. But I actually feel like there is cause to be optimistic. Look, there are people, you know, who happen to be people of faith who are perhaps discriminatory, just as there are people who are not people of faith who are discriminatory. But I actually see real evidence out there that the vast majority of the faith community want to live and let live.
That's right. And
they're, you know, it's a distraction, I think, to focus too much on those that might have a different view. So I think it's really important that we seize the positive and we actually make something concrete out of that. So that's often, I mean, there's a difference between being blindly optimistic and actually going, you know what, our optimism gives us a vision of how we want to live as a community, and then we've got to go and roll up our sleeves and make sure that that is the reality.
Ed, we're almost out of time and we do need to move on, but it sounds to me that where we really need to move this debate is not into additional legislation or amendments to legislation, but rather the establishment of a national human rights charter that essentially frames the way in which we continue with our governance and our investments and programs. Do you have a quick response to that?
Yeah, I mean, we've been on the record for, again, decades saying that we've got piecemeal protections in human rights in Australia. We're the only liberal democracy that doesn't have a charter of human rights or a bill of rights. So that's something that we think would be a really important improvement.
Ed, I think we'll take that up as a topic for further discussion and more in-depth analysis next year sometime, if you're around. In the meantime, thank you very much for your time this morning, and we'd like to wish you the very best for the coming season and, of course, the new year. Thank you for making yourself available this morning.
Thanks for having me.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.